better time. You can get 4 cuts off the new coming album at bandcamp.com. You can get them cheap. I'll put a link in my show blog at ecoshock.info. In this complex piece I'm going to play you called Carbon Bubble, Brinkman does what we all do. He agonizes over his own role, burning fossil fuels just to earn a living. But the piece is deeper than that. It calls out a caricature of what I would call the super carbon human.
And pollution, but this rhythm and the music is my living. When I do it, I get paid. Yeah, it's been a decade since I've had a day job, and I did it my way, like Frank Sinatra. I'm just kicking up a racket. I could be at a university teaching classes, but this is more fun than teaching. Look at the people I'm reaching. Been around the world. I fly to Europe for the weekend, do a gig in California before I fly to New Zealand. Encyclopedic Rolling Stone, pinch me, I'm dreaming. And you can check my status. Got a U.S. visa, 01, artist of extraordinary achievement. This is all I've ever wanted, baby, living the life. In the past 5 years, 150 flights, 15 countries, 40 states and provinces. And as for carbon emissions, I'm off the charts with it. Fossil fuel is how I got here, both to entertain you and in my career. If you're earning something, well then you're burning something. Prosperity is driven by internal combustion. Holler back. We got Mother Nature on the back, but it's a one-time thing, never call her back. Carbons at both ends, burning to make money and burning to spend. And no one tells me how to dispose of my own property. A globe-trotting solo artist with total autonomy. This is what I am, fossil fuel is a part of me. It powers 80% of the global economy. In other words, if you have some money, it's got oil stains on it, your hands are bloody. And if you don't believe me, go ahead and do a study. Pimping ain't easy, you better ask somebody. Cooking with gas is pimping, driving a car is pimping. Energy consumption is pimping. Look at how we're living gangster compared to horse. Some buggy days, cranking up the air conditioner on muggy days. You're not freezing to death in the winter. If energy consumption is a sin, I'm a sinner. Life is good, it's better than it used to be. Let the good times roll, fossil fuels are cheap. That's how we stay hella major. Prosperity is the bomb, player hater. Holler back. We got Mother Nature on the back, but it's a one-time thing, never call her back. Lights, conserve power, everything goes dark, it's Earth hour. We're taking action on climate change, all together now, back to the Stone Age. In the meantime, I'll be up in Vegas, illuminated, laughing at you player haters. Face it, ballin' is part of our nature, embrace it. You love energy wasting, would you rather be living large and comfortably, or in a shack burning dung for heat? Some people don't have a choice, but you do, so don't hit me with any hypocritical voodoo about trying to reduce my footprint voluntarily. I'm trying to make ends, I can't let them barely meet. I'm always trying to get more gigs and fly more. I got a wife and a daughter to provide for, and maybe one day solar will supply us. I hope so, it's better for global climate. Just don't make me choose between solar and diapers, and don't make me switch off my amplifier.
Radio EcoShock. Right voices in dark times. Get more. EcoShock.info.
This is a podcast of Costing the Earth from the BBC. For full terms and conditions, please go to the website at bbc.co.uk.
I'm sitting in a cafe near Rio Branco, a Brazilian city in the west of the Amazon rainforest, and I'm drinking a juice from something called graviola. It's a large, prickly green fruit that tastes like a cross between pineapple and mango. If you've never heard of it, that's because it comes from deep within the rainforest itself. And there are other rainforest treats on sale in the cafes around here, like açaí, served as a kind of sorbet, tereré, a herb made into ice-cold tea, and guaraná, a berry from the rainforest made into a carbonated soft drink. I was last in this part of Brazil 30 years ago. Then I saw columns of smoke rising into the air as ranchers and farmers made a grab for the Amazon's virgin rainforests. I saw fields filled with the burnt stumps of enormous trees. But today there's hope. Deforestation rates have plunged, and the wild products of the rainforest, like the fruits, herbs and berries being sold around here, are now becoming hugely popular outside Brazil, promoted as superfoods in the US and Europe. In this week's Costing the Earth, I'm going to look at how these products could make standing forests economically viable. Could the rainforest finally be worth more alive than dead?
The plant is called guaraná. It grows wild in the exotic Brazilian rainforest.
Camu Camu, a natural vitamin C-rich superfood sourced from one of the most nutritionally dense regions of the world, the Amazon rainforest, a virtual treasure chest of many superfoods and herbs.
Coming in at number 7 on our list of hot health trends is the açaí berry, and people are calling it this miracle drink.
This is the Chico Mendes Extractive Reserve, a million-hectare expanse of forest in the northwest corner of Brazil. It was one of the first areas to be set aside with government protection, specifically to extract the products of the forest on a sustainable basis. Professor Anthony Hall of the London School of Economics has studied the concept.
Well, an extractive reserve is modelled along the lines of the indigenous reserve. It's basically designed to protect the natural resources, Brazil nuts for example, while at the same time preserving the livelihoods of those people that live in the reserve. It's not a reserve in the sense of being a total vacuum. It's recognized that there are people living there and the needs of these people have to be met using the resources at their disposal.
So are they allowed to cut down any of the forest or destroy any of the forest? What are the rules usually?
Well, there are usually strict limits to the amount which amount of forest, for example, which residents are allowed to chop down. But the whole emphasis is on preservation, in the sense that the natural capital should be preserved as much as possible, and the extractive products of the reserve should be used as productively as possible.
What this has done is it has created greater incentive for these local populations to become what we like to call, you know, guardians of the forest.
Monique Varney is Anthony Hall's PhD student, a Brazilian researcher studying the products coming from extractive communities.
These people aren't desperate enough to make a living that they'll, you know, cut forests down or you know, take extreme measures to make a little extra money. So that has created a situation where it's easier to work with these populations and to, you know, teach them about conservation and create business models in which they can participate that don't put the forest in danger, basically.
The idea started around the town of Chapuri in the far west of Brazil. It came out of a struggle in the 1980s between rubber tappers and powerful cattle ranchers who wanted to destroy the forests where they worked to turn them into pasture. Chico Mendes, one of the rubber tappers' leaders, wanted the government to declare the forest a protected reserve from which they could continue to extract rubber, nuts, fruits and berries.
The extractive reserves came about in the late 1980s and were the product of a land struggle between the resident population of the area in the states of Acre, principally in Rondônia and Amazonas, the struggle between the resident populations, which were the remnants of a rubber tapping population which had existed there for 100 years on the one hand, and on the other hand the forest grabbing front which came up from São Paulo looking for new resources to exploit, which were also fueled by the particular development philosophy of the time, which saw the whole future of Brazil, as far as Amazon was concerned at least, in terms of absorbing land into a sort of national project. There were standoffs between the resident population and the incoming land grabbers, which got increasingly bloody and fueled by also by the international environmental movement, which was discovering this focus of conflict which was emerging as the Amazon was burning at the time in the late 1980s. This culminated, of course, in the assassination of Chico Mendes on the 22nd of December 1988. And this led to a more or less an international environmental crisis, you could say.
Tell me a bit about Chico Mendes. Who was he? And how was he instrumental in getting this whole thing started?
Well, Chico Mendes was an active trade unionist who emerged in the 1980s as this battlefront over the land was under dispute. And he was a major figure in organizing the local rural trades unions to put up resistance in the face of total inaction by the government.
Hoje de manhã em Chapuri, interior do Acre, o ecologista e líder sindicalista Chico Mendes. Ele foi assassinado com um tiro de escopeta no quintal da casa dele na noite de quinta-feira.
Chico Mendes was more than just a local union leader. He represented the hopes of communities across the Amazon basin at a time when the rainforest was facing its greatest threat. He had spoken for the forest at international meetings, met with congressional leaders in Washington, and received awards from both the United Nations Environment Program and the U.S. National Wildlife Federation.
And coming up next on your very own Free Radio Santa Cruz, in what could be our last live broadcast, but we'll still have live streams, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the special updates coming from Salinas, from the cannabis cultivation crush that's planned by the Board of Supervisors, and lots of other stuff, so stay tuned.
Grassroots movement, which was pioneering.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial, tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the technically challenged version. I'm Robert Norris, and for 2 hours I'm going to be talking about local stuff and civil liberties, often about people outside who are poor and unhoused. This is a call-in show, in case you want to be a part of this, and the call-in number, which I'll be repeating hopefully throughout the show, is 427-3772. So you're invited to call in to 427-3772 if you have any thoughts, updates on what's going on, breaking news around Santa Cruz, or just plain grumbles and grunts and growls, whatever you got. I'm hoping to get a phone call soon from Wes White, who is a regular caller from Salinas, who works with the Flagpole community over there, the group of unhoused folks who have housed themselves with tents and been sleeping out every night at City Hall, about 20 to 40 of them. Really nice little tent community, the ones I saw when I was over there about a week ago as they fought the city council's latest attack on unhoused people, not just them, but generally throughout the Salinas area. They have a deadline coming up tomorrow night, which Wes White may be discussing. I think he's already mentioned it in past phone discussions, conversations. That's when the anti-camping ban, or the camping ban, the anti-camping law, the anti-homeless camping ban, will be due to go into effect. It and may result in a mass eviction of all the folks in tents. That's what they have to be ready for at 12:01 on October 1st. And there's a chance I and others may go over there to be in solidarity with them, depending on what other folks want to do, and also our own stamina here. It's a sort of an uncertain question. There are some other announcements I want to make regarding upcoming items. Tomorrow, I believe, Steve Plaich, who is a city council candidate, an activist who's unhoused himself and has been advocating for homeless folks to some extent for the last few years. He's running for the shitty council, as I like to call our own little group of political pretenders here who have the political power in town, or at least theoretically have the political power in town to make things better, and instead are choosing to make things worse for poor folks. The situation with Steve is he has a kind of, I guess it's a get-together, a meet-and-greet session is how he phrases it, from 5 to 7 tomorrow night, Friday the 30th of September, at Woodstock's Pizza, 710 Front Street. If you're familiar with Woodstock's Pizza, it's right next to FedEx, if you know FedEx, and around the corner from Trader Joe's, if you know that. Again, 5 to 7 tomorrow, he says, well, he must have written this himself. His tireless efforts to improve the lives of veterans and the houseless, his involvement on progressive and environmental and social issues with ACLU, DCEL Alternatives, Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project, Community Television, Mental Health Client Action Network, MHCAN, Association of Faith Communities, and SCORE, Santa Cruz County Community Coalition to Overcome Racism. And I think his association with these is sort of a very mixed bag. He has successfully gotten onto the board of a lot of these groups, and he's also become vice chair or chair, and then done, as far as I can see, very little. In fact, he's sort of stalled those of us who attempted to hold these organizations accountable for inaction on police brutality, inaction on criminalization of the homeless and local civil liberties abuses that the ACLU is ignoring. False starts, inaction, and more talk than walk on homeless persons' legal assistance. Essentially the destruction of local community TV, at least according to some community TV programmers, such as Sandy Lee, who's been on the show. Mental health, MHCAN, you've heard me describing my disappointment with MHCAN's choosing to crack down on its clients rather than make a public campaign of fighting the abuses by the police department and it's unclear who they are, but real estate speculators and local businesses harassing this group of folks, cutting back intimidating the director into cutting back services from 200 a day to 50 a day. It's the usual closed process. Directors don't want to take a responsibility, sort of, you know, do the let's go slow and dicker with the bigots and or try to respond before to their criticism so we can keep our funding, that sort of thing, which I'm always, and I'm not just ambivalent about it, I'm torn about it because I know I don't have to depend on these services, and there are plenty of people who do, who use them, and the cry that you're threatening to close down the services if you criticize the directors is a familiar one, and it's not always an untrue one either. So it's a real sensitive issue, and I try to present both sides. I'll continue to do so as best I can when I get new information. Drew Glover, another city council candidate, has a fundraiser himself next week, Thursday, October 6th, 6 to 8, at Jane Weed Pomerantz and Ron Pomerantz's house. He's more of an establishment candidate in this situation, though he does speak out on police abuse issues and is a friendly enough guy. Well, he has been speaking out, at least during the campaign, a bit. I don't recall his speaking out a lot before that, or for that matter, Steve Plage speaking out a lot before that. People in this town don't spend a lot of time or expend a lot of their, quote, political capital or, some would say, risk their asses, but I don't think you risk your ass when you criticize the police department, particularly if your criticisms are true, thoughtful, and explicit. But, you know, it depends on who you are and what your experience is, and that's been my experience. I mean, I've gotten harassed early in my criticism career, if you will. I was relentlessly gone after by now-dead Sergeant Butchie Baker, Lauren Baker, the guy who, along with Butler, became, you know, regional heroes in the eyes of the police department and the Sentinel, and I guess a lot of other people, I think, undeservedly for getting shot dead on the doorstep of a police call. These are folks who harass the homeless regularly, or at least Baker did. Butler as well, but perhaps not so regularly. And instead they get, you know, flowers at their funeral and lots of endless encomiums and memorials, and every year we get the same memorial. So it's part of the propaganda that the police department locally uses, just as police departments generally use, to bolster their extremely privileged and dangerous position as risky public safety officers who are daily risking their lives, you know, this kind of stuff. And if you look at actual accidents and fatalities in professions, you find that farmers and truck drivers and other professions have a much significantly higher fatality rate. They don't get that kind of publicity, and they perform useful services, too. Police department has a very good publicity, a publicity department, and they're also very, they're a significant part of repressing people who are responding, I think, meaningfully and significantly and often forcefully to abuses in the existing establishment system that we're under, the wage slavery, rent slavery system that, you know, goes on every day, the criminalization of the homeless, the export of jobs. I mean, you hear these talking heads, Clinton and Trump, babbling about it at their so-called debates, which have nothing to do with the real issues in terms of anything that's actually intended and is likely to happen. It's a way of sort of pacifying the public every 4 years with the illusion of a democratic possible change. And we need to do the changes here, and we need to keep our eyes on that. Do what you want at the polls in early November. That's as far as these two clowns go. The braggart and the liar, or the liar and the war criminal. I don't know what you want to call these two. But they have pretty much made themselves known to the community. Even the media, some of it has leaked out there. And we have the same problem with local politicians, too. Local politicians are concerned with fundraising and not offending different groups. And they speak vaguely rather than specifically. And they are not interested in truly basic solutions or radical solutions. Radical, of course, means going to the root, you know, getting uprooting these scoundrels. I think what I'm going to do, though, is try to get a hold of Wes White and see if he has any updates on what is happening tomorrow in Salinas. He's not the happiest camper, both about what's happening and about the lack of response, last I heard from him. So let's ring him up and see what we can find here. He may be eating dinner, for all I know. Who knows?
Hey, Robert, how are you doing?
Hey, Wes, you're live on the air. Welcome to Free Radio.
Oh, gosh. Okay, hey, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Thanks for having me.
No. Well, thanks for letting yourself be surprised. I warned you it would be about an hour, and this is it.
It's working right.
So, you have
all right. Is this any better?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
No, I couldn't hear you very well, but that's all right.
How about now?
I think the last time you were pretty low as well.
Oh, boy. Let me try a different
one. I don't know if it's just your setup or whatever. But anyway, we're wasting time. What's going on?
How's this sound? Is this better? Hello? Same problem?
It's still low, but it's all right. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm shifting mics here to see what we can do. So, Wes, you are part of the Monterey County,
Homeless Union.
What?
It's the Monterey County Homeless Union, and there's also a Facebook page for Monterey County Homeless Advocates.
Okay.
And I guess we've been kind of combating this. This is like deja vu, like the third or fourth time now that we've had to deal with this ordinance. So, a year ago we started this, and we've just been trying to figure for people, more or less. It's gone through changes. At one point it was bulky, no bulky items. We won that. They came out with a new one saying Chinatown was an emergency health hazard. We couldn't get our fire trucks through. We can't connect them to the fire hydrants. They even did a test right before that. You know, they're not above lying. They're not above manipulating the situation in their benefit and plastering all over the news and propagandizing the whole situation. So they were able to clear out Chinatown back in March. At that point, we started doing a flagpole thing. We've been going strong, about 35, 40 people now a night, and it may be bigger tonight. I'm not sure. It was already bigger last night. And,
so by flagpole thing, you mean the flagpole community, a bunch of folks with tents and companions and... They spent the night at City Hall and have for the last 6 months, right?
That's correct. Well, you know, to eliminate the bulky item and replace it with the new one, they collaborated with the service providers in the county, and we'll probably just service providers, more or less, one in particular, the Homeless Coalition And they brokered a 6-6 deal so you could camp anywhere on city property. Well, they only meant that to be in Chinatown during the night and everybody scurry about during the day and nobody really remain on the sidewalk. That was what they envisioned, you know. Well, the 6-6 thing also said anywhere on city property. And you know, what started happening, I mean, I was videoing everything, and you know, you see all these notices pop up all over the place, man, you can't keep up. You don't even know what's going on. So, you know, trying to film all that, it just got frustrating. So I just, you know, I mean, we were already camping there from the 23rd, and there was just more people kept on coming down the flagpole. They were getting displaced. I mean, that was, you know, and no connection with services, just uprooted and kicked out, and you know, see you later. Hopefully we can do this again someday. You know, I mean,
yeah,
the
services stuff is mainly
high-handed, heavy-handed, and
the services.
So we've been protesting the last 6 months, you know, to connect people with services. That's in your administrative procedure, 72 hours or less.
That's the, of course, that's
contacted you know, connected, put on a path toward housing.
Can you hear me now?
That never happened.
Hello?
Not once.
So we are having connection problems because I want to kind of interrupt you and ask you some questions or make some comments. I guess the best thing for you to do when you're talking is after every few sentences, pause, because then you'll be perhaps able to hear my faint voice. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Good. So, yeah, so you've been doing this for 6 months, and, of course, services is always the excuse they use, the candy coating they use for the community, not so much for the homeless. I don't even think they care whether homeless people believe them or not.
Correct.
But they just, you know, they want it to look good in the media, and they also have some concern, I suppose, for eventual court action, you know, because there's always a claim that if there's no services at all and no place to go, then that's a necessity to sleep, and therefore you can't really make it illegal for them to sleep everywhere, which is what was found in Los Angeles.
Well, you know, they're curing that by putting one health center in basically almost a year and a half ahead of their schedule. I mean, they basically, we helped move the pendulum, you know, to get the clock going. And they sped up their funding. So, you know, it's supposed to open maybe the middle of October, the end of October. You know, at this point, it's not going to open the beginning of October, that's for sure.
What is the,
another 2 weeks or so.
What is the health center?
And, you know,
Wes, hello, Wes.
But that only serves Chinatown.
Hang on.
That's it.
You got it, Wes.
So basically, everybody's going to move there to do anything.
Wes, you got to pause because I try and pause after every few sentences. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what is this health center and how many people does it serve? And remember, a couple of sentences and then give yourself a little space so you can hear what my response may be. Go ahead.
Okay. I really can't hear what you're saying.
What I'm saying is, what is this health center? How many people does it serve? And don't forget to give me a chance to give yourself a break after a few sentences. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. There's this health center. It's got, I think, six stalls or something like that for bathrooms, and then two showers. So, you know, they keep it going that way, and it's just a direct entry exit.
Does it have any facilities for sleeping, a backyard for tents, perhaps, anything like that?
It does have a little parking lot, but they do not envision using that for tents.
So they aren't providing any services for people as far as what you're providing and have been providing for
As far as shelter, no.
Or just people allowing
Although CSUMB has a little pilot plan that they had in the works and grants and negotiations with the city, and the city never brought it up at that time. You know, while they were getting prepared for all this money, they're going to do about 10 tents and totes and people could store an extra tote of their own stuff during the day.
So let's
do what I'm already doing too, which is store some property for them so they can move about a little more freely and safely and, you know, feel confident their stuff is safe.
Wes, let's talk about what's happening or not happening tomorrow night, because I know I've already mentioned that there's a midnight deadline when this new anti-camping ban goes into effect. Has there been any really clear threats by the police department to begin enforcing at 12:01 in the morning on Saturday morning the 1st of October?
You know, they've been pretty good at holding their cards close to their chest. So, you know, they're... But as far as I understand, I mean, you know, I think the city administration has been sending pretty clear messages of, you know, it's on. So.
And what has been the reaction of the community that, you know, is, you know, about to be driven away? Are they interested in making a stand? Are they seeking to go somewhere else and do something else? Are they just sort of, you know, waiting for the inevitable? What do you sense is going on?
Well, outside, I guess most people are just kind of like, yeah, they've done it to us before. They'll do it again. They can't really get us. But, I mean, it's eventually going to be their turn no matter what. And I guess I mean, it's like being jackrabbits about the city now because, you're not legitimate. And just for them to drive by, you're a target.
Well, my question, though, is the group of people you have there at the flagpole community, are they, is there any sense of, A, they're either going to stay there at least and maybe take citations or move somewhere else, but move as a group and find another place to stay that is, you know, a place that will make a stand until they're told to move and then move somewhere else, which is what people in Portland, Oregon did 20 years ago, and they created Dignity Village. And I'm not saying this would work in Salinas because in Portland they had an ordinance change, the so-called Wicks decision, that threw out their camping ban.
Well, there is a plan in the works
there
for
is a,
moving around.
You have a secret.
But,
you have a secret.
Really
you have a secret plan to win the war here. Is that what's going on?
I'm sorry. Can you hear?
I said you have a secret plan to win the war.
No, not to win the war, just to survive.
Well, that would be winning the war.
But yes, winning the war is, yes, there is a little expectation, I suppose, and strategy goes along with it.
So what are you looking for from the community for tomorrow night? Can you still hear me?
Yeah, well, of course, I'm looking for people to come out and stick their neck out and, you know, receive a ticket from the city. I don't know when or if they'll fall through, but it has been pretty clear the last week that, you know, they intend to fully enforce and get rid of everybody at City Hall in the very first and foremost instance. And I don't know if that'll be the first or second or, you know, waiting until Monday or Tuesday, you know, when people are fatigued and wear out waiting for a ticket.
Now,
we'll have to wait on that, you know.
Now,
but
critics,
as many people willing to get a ticket, we'll take it to court.
Wes?
Jury trial. I mean, come on.
Wes?
Really?
Wes?
Like we're standing up for other people. And, you know, you get claimed as guilty. I mean, we're standing up for your civil rights, man.
So, Wes, try to remember to pause.
Yes.
There have been critics here in Santa Cruz for the Freedom Sleepers who do something, who were originally kind of planning or seemed to be talking about doing the kind of nightly thing you were doing, or at least, you know, taking tickets and then coming back and taking more tickets and flooding the courts and yada, yada, yada. This was a strategy that we actually used with some limited success in the late 80s and early 90s in Santa Cruz, but it didn't happen, and instead critics were saying of us, oh, you're just getting the homeless to get a lot of tickets, and then, you know, what are they going to do? They just have to deal with court or harassment from police, in your case, and with misdemeanor charges. And if people, I mean, to simply get a ticket is not going to be enough unless people are going to come back and keep repeating this or have some other strategy in mind, or is it? What's your sense about the strategy you're suggesting?
Well, I suppose it depends on how much exposure it gets. I mean, because the reality situation is pretty grim, and it's pretty obvious that this is a bullshit way to go. And taking people who are already broke to begin with. You know, I mean, people are going to get tickets no matter where they go. So, in front of City Hall is about the best legitimate spot you got for, you know, freedom of speech and under constitutionality. You know, I mean, otherwise you're just out and about. Well, they just popped you because you got a tune-up. I mean, you know.
Now, were folks willing? You've talked to people, no doubt, in the last week about this who are living in the flagpole community. Are they?
Yes.
Are they actually interested in taking either tickets once or multiple tickets in order to make a point or in order to overburden the courts or in order to...
Yes. For some people, this is their home and they got nowhere else to go and they're tired of moving around and they're ready to stick up for themselves.
That sounds good. And
so, yeah, there's a few people that will stay repeatedly. And I'll stay as long as anybody else will let me stay, I'll stay.
Well, you kind of put yourself in a position where you kind of feel obliged, don't you? I mean, this isn't something you're relishing, I imagine.
I'm sorry?
This isn't something you're relishing. It's something you feel obliged to do, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, damn. What do you want people to know out here in Santa Cruz if they are going to come to be supportive, which I have no idea if that's going to be the case? They should show up, tomorrow night before midnight? And
yeah, well, 6 to 6, so 6 p.m. we're going to try to have a potluck dinner. We also, already have some food on the way, but it'd be nice. I don't know how large crowd there might be, man. I know there's an awful lot of people who've been very supportive, on Facebook and calling and, talking. But whether or not they'll actually turn out, I don't know. It kind of doesn't directly affect their life and not their society. But as many people as possible, man, just stick it out and at least say goodbye to the cyclone. I mean, that's kind of what's going to happen. Everybody who, doesn't want to stay the night will leave before midnight. And before that, we'll just have a big party. And, after that, it's kind of, nail-biting experience because who knows when they'll come by. I mean, will you really be able to sleep at night anymore? It's going to be stressful no matter where you go in the city. So you may as well make a stand in the most legitimate spot in the city.
So folks can go to what address if they want to be a part of this?
It's 200 Lincoln Avenue. So it's at Gabilan and Lincoln in Salinas, California, 93901.
Gabilan and Lincoln at what, 200 Lincoln Avenue, did you say, or did I get that number wrong?
Correct, 200 Lincoln Avenue.
Well, you can keep me advised. If I don't make it, you can, if you feel like calling me and doing a blow-by-blow, we'll do a recording of it. And otherwise, who knows, you may see some of us from Santa Cruz if we get it together, get over there, but I don't know. Again, I don't want to...
Well, what I'll try to do is remember to call you if there's any live action, you can record it at the same time that I'm recording.
Oh, that sounds good. You'll be doing some recording in any case,
right? Well, play-by-play action, when people start getting a ticket. Because it'll be everybody, and who knows how large that'll be, even if it's 5 or 3, or it might be a couple dozen. I mean, there are people that are clicking they're going, on Facebook. So I don't, I don't know if that just means they're staying for the party or if they're staying all night or, how long they can commit. I don't know.
Sounds good. Well, I hope it's good and that it sounds, sounds uncertain. So we'll see how that goes. We've been talking with Wes White in Salinas. Thank you, Wes. And again,
sure.
It's 200 Lincoln. Party tomorrow night and then get serious if and when the police arrive to seize people's survival gear and property and run them off. And I guess that'll be...
Better than running around like jackrabbits, man. We just will stick it out right there. Anybody and everybody's welcome. Come with lunch. Stay, tent some blankets. Bring some tents and blankets, though, because it does still get cold at night.
Sounds good. Thank you.
If you're willing to stay.
All right. You take care, man.
All right. Thanks, Robert. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And my apologies to folks for the bad transmission. I don't know. Other phone calls do seem to be more audible. I haven't had any today, but that's been my experience as well. Let's hear a little music, and then I will be back.
Come your ranks of labor, come Union Corps, and see if you remember the struggles of before. When you were standing helpless on the outside of the door, started building links on the chain, and you started building links on the chain. When the police on the horses were waiting on demand, riding through the strike with a pistol in their hand, swinging at the skulls of many a Union man, as you build one more link on the chain, as you build one more link on the chain. Then the army of the fascists tried to put you on the run, but the army of the Union, they did what could be done. Oh, the power of the factory was greater than the gun, as you built one more link on the chain, as you built one more link on the chain. And then in 1954, decisions finally made. Oh, the black man was rising fast, racing from the shade. And your union took no stand, and your union was betrayed, as you lost yourself a link on the chain, as you lost yourself a link on the chain. And then there came the boycotts, and then the freedom rides, and forgetting what you stood for, you tried to block the tide. Oh, the automation bosses were laughing on the side, as they watched you lose your leg on the chain, as they watched you lose your leg on the chain. You know when they block your trucks, boys, while it on the road, all that they are doing is all that you have shown. That you gotta strike, you gotta fight to get what you are owed. When you're building all your length on the chain, when you're building all your length on the chain. And the man who tries to tell you that they'll take your job away, he's the same man who was scabbing hard just the other day. And your union's not a union till he's thrown out of the way, and he's choking on your leg of the chain, and he's choking on your leg of the chain. For now the times are telling you the times are rolling on, and you're fighting for the same thing, the jobs that will be gone. Now it's only fair to ask you, boys, which side are you on? As you're building all your links on the chain, as you're building all your links on the chain.
Phil Oakes, Links on the Chain from the mid-60s. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. This is called Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides, the show. I'm Robert Norris, and the call-in number here is 427-3772. If you have local news about Santa Cruz, concerns about folks outside or tenants' rights or other kinds of abuses that may have happened to you here in Santa Cruz that involve authorities, that's what interests me, and I like to give people a chance to speak about these issues here. 427-3772. Let's go to some street interviews.
It's Food Not Bomb Saturday, and I'm talking with
Ricardo Lopez.
And what's new in the last 24 hours there, Ricardo?
I want your listeners to go up and look north off of the Water Street Bridge and look at all of that flattened out, dry smashed land, that they wasted who knows how much money running that great big giant bulldozer thing all over that little peninsula out there for hours yesterday and the day before, just to knock down the bushes that do no good whatsoever. To do that, it doesn't stop the... it's just to try and make it inconvenient for people, poor people. Now, the homeless, that's okay. They're bad people. But we're talking about just normal poor people from here who don't have a house. Yeah. That's to keep... four poor people who still live out there. It's done nothing to keep those poor Santa Cruz residents from moving out. It's just your government is out there showing people, punishing people for being poor in Santa Cruz. So I want you to know that however many millions of dollars they spent out there, and that's probably what it cost with all of those trucks, three great big, one tractor and two great big bulldozers to run for days out there. Chainsaws, probably paying them overtime for their Saturday and Sunday work. Yeah, just to try and inconvenience four people who live out there and still live there.
And you are one of those four people.
I could possibly be, and I'm perfectly on a fine little place watching them do this all around me.
We're going to find you, Ricardo, and then we're going to hang you.
Do you realize that one time they cut down every possible place they thought that it was possible for people to hide, and then told me and Black Mike and Casey that they wouldn't, that now we got you guys, there's no place for you to hide, and we disappeared right into that island immediately. 2 weeks later, they came up all sad-faced, said, we know that you've got some place that you're hiding out there. You're not fooling us. We know you're still out there hiding. We start laughing at them.
It's an expensive game of hide-and-seek.
Yeah, with your money, though, I guess it's okay, but I start thinking a little bit of that is my money. Every time I buy something, I'm paying taxes, and cities make it on their sales tax, property tax, stuff like that. And with the way that they're not making it on the property tax, I'm sure they need my sales tax money. Yeah.
Well, Ricardo, will you be sleeping soundly tonight?
Yes, at night, if they don't start running the bulldozer past my house late tonight just to inconvenience me, which they might.
Anything else?
No, not for now, but I've got plenty more where that came from.
Of course, we've been listening to the report of
Ricardo.
Thank you, Ricardo.
Thank you.
So, Robert, for a third time, actually, we're going to be chatting with you. You say that the Homeless Lack of Services Center is not letting you pick up your mail and you have to have a police escort. Is this a tall tale you're telling us?
Well, I had an appellate brief that was sent from my appellate project attorneys to appeal my $140,000 criminal restitution. And the HSC mailroom sat on that for 4 months in their mailroom.
Right, but now if you want to pick up mail, first of all, are you allowed, do you have an account there? Or when your mail arrives there, do they destroy it? Do they keep it? What do they do?
I don't know what they do with it, no.
But when was the last time you tried to pick it up?
July 26th was when I picked it up, and I said, well, I miss my appeal now because this has been sitting here for 4 months.
What's this about police escorting you in? You mentioned that a moment ago off audio.
Well, the lady kicked me out for life off the shelter because they held that mail for 4 months. Because I was unhappy that they held that document for 4 months, they said, well, you're kicked out for life. And they said, if you don't leave the property, we're going to call the cops and you're going to go to jail.
But you say you called...
So I stayed there.
Yeah.
The police came. I was waiting for them. It took them 15, 20 minutes.
Right.
Because they said they're being assaulted by me at the freaking gate.
Right.
And then I get there. He goes, oh, the guy's right here? Well, what's he doing? And I said, and I asked the police officers, could you take a report that this has been given to me 4 months late? And go, oh, we don't have to do that. I said, you have a duty to take a police report.
He goes, well, how do they know it's 4 months late would be the question.
Well, you just have to look at the date on it, when it was sent and when I got it.
How do they know that they didn't see you walk in, ask for it, and in other words, they didn't see the whole process. So you might have been sneaking around with a phony story, trying to generate sympathy of some kind.
Well, I was sitting there. They said I won't leave, so apparently I didn't come with something. And
But you have not attempted to go back, and because you originally told me, and I guess I misunderstood.
Yeah, I need a police escort to get my mail now.
But have you actually ever used a police escort to get your mail?
No, I go set up an appointment, and then they said they'll go out with me, but it's a whole ordeal, you know.
So, when were you told this?
Well, July 26th, they said I'm banned for life from HSC campus.
And so you said if I want my mail, how did you then learn about this police escort thing?
Well, I found out that's how I'd have to do, just like eviction, to go get your stuff out of your residence.
And who told you that?
Well, it's just something I came across in the law library.
I see. Okay, fair enough. And again, we've been listening to...
Robert Burnett. But I was also going to mention I cannot even sign up at River Street Shelter or Page Smith Shelter because they will not allow me to go into their locked compound.
And you don't have a telephone to call in.
And no telephone to call.
Of course, Paul Eloff does no longer have a sign-up list, but River Street Shelter allegedly does. So thank you, Robert.
Okay.
And so all we just say is tough luck. Leave town and die.
Tough luck, die out in the street. HP is not even going to help you if you're bleeding out. So
I heard a concern about that today.
Don't crawl to the door when you're dying. Go to Dominican. They might help you.
Well, don't disturb the authorities.
And again, a reminder for those who are sleeping outside, which is illegal after 11 o'clock at night in Santa Cruz, even if you're very peaceful, even if you're not blocking the sidewalk, even if you're not crapping in the lawn, even if you're on public property and not private property, even if you're in a vehicle that's legally parked, that is registered legally and that you are completely legal in, that is still a crime in Santa Cruz after 11. Literally, to fall asleep is a crime. And, of course, there's no shelter. There's no walk-in shelter for anybody. The only possibility really is the River Street shelter, and there's a waiting list there, which I'm going to remind you, if you want to get on the waiting list in order to not get a place necessarily, but to simply get your tickets dismissed during the period of time that you are on the waiting list, that is now a part of the law, has been for 6 years, and you call the River Street shelter at 459-6644. 459-6644 and tell them your name. I want to get on the waiting list, and then call back every 3 days to renew that membership on the list. And then if you get a ticket during that period of time, supposedly, the city attorney's office will dismiss them. And that was at one point confirmed by city council candidate Steve Plaich some years ago, although I'm not aware he's been keeping up with that issue recently. But, of course, I haven't asked him about it either. Let's hear some more. This is from a Food Not Bombs get-together. They happen every Saturday and Sunday, 4 to 6, at the main post office, or I should say on the sidewalk adjacent to the main post office. And let's hear what's happening or what happened and some more from the, I guess it's the 17th.
Talking with
John Colby, Dr. John Colby.
And John, you're tired. You've been doing a lot of trekking around trying to help folks, plus trying to get enough money to scrape together your own outdoors existence.
Exactly.
But in the course of this, you've had an experience today at the Dominican that you wanted to talk about.
We actually started at Harvey West Park because
okay.
Robert called us and told us there was a woman, Jessica Nash, who needed some help, and we didn't know what she needed. So it actually was a lot. It took a lot of driving around to locate her. We finally located her. We parked, and I talked to her. She was in her car. She could barely move. She was so fatigued. And then I started asking her. I go through an intake thing where I ask name, date of birth, all that stuff. And I start going down her disabilities and medicines. And she told me she hadn't peed for 6 days. And I go, oh, my God, that means she's ready to die. So I said, you have to get to the hospital, emergency hospital room, as soon as possible. And she says, but they mistreat me there. I don't want to go there. I said, I'll walk you through to make sure they treat you. And so I gave her what to tell them to say and basically promised that I would make it happen.
You yourself have advocated for disabled people before.
Right, and we've also advocated for people at Dominican Hospital. Dominican Hospital routinely mistreats disabled homeless people. I've had to file three federal complaints, federal law enforcement complaints against Dominican, maybe it's four. I think it's four against Dominican Hospital. So basically Andy Carcello, Laura Boyd, and then that woman, Tara, who had the motion assistance animal, who they tried to have the sheriff's arrest us for trying to unite her with their assistance animal. Remember, I don't know her name, but you know her, remember her? She was in the Freedom Sleepers. she had broken ribs and they didn't want to do any, give her any service, and so they denied it.
I may remember vaguely.
So I had to file a DHS OIG complaint about that. I mean, every time they do this crap, I have to basically compose a complaint. I have to get all the facts and details. Then I have to call DHS OIG and DHS Office of Civil Rights, Justice Department of Health and Human Services, and then I have to basically call at like 8 in the morning because their hours are 3 hours ahead, you know, and I have to wait on the line for like.
Was there in these previous three cases, just briefly, a successful outcome?
There was to some extent, but basically the DHSO is—they're investigating that hospital for sure. I can tell you that they got basically what they did to Anthony Carcella was attempted murder.
So you're told there's an investigation underway. But what happened?
What I'm saying is
what happened with Jessica Nash? Let's get back to her.
Okay, so Jessica Nash, I asked for her. The first step is getting me to be able to talk to the people there, to their staff. So I asked her to have them sign a consent form. So that would allow me to talk to medical staff. And what they do is they're trying everything they can to cut me out of the equation. So first they say, we'll give her a consent form if she needs one. I said, don't, if she needs one, she wants one, give it to her. And then they won't give it to her. And then I told her, go up to the front desk and demand one. Like if you or I, Robert Norse, walked in there and we said, I want so-and-so to be able to talk, like, well, my brother or my sister or my mother, to be able to advocate on my behalf, and I want them to sign a consent form, they would not give you any shit.
Did she do that?
She did it. She did it, and they still wouldn't do it. I even called the sheriffs. I called the SCR 911. We went around with the SCR 911 with the operator for like half an hour and finally talked to his supervisor. And unbeknownst to me, he had sent the sheriff out there like I asked, but he lied to me and said he wanted the sheriff out to us to talk to us, the Freedom Sleepers. So then I talked to the supervisor. I said, I'm going to file this federal complaint, and I'm going to get litigation involved with an attorney, and you don't want to be involved. You want to have done everything right. So I talked to the supervisor. She basically said the deputy was out there and was talking to them. So they were off the hook. They called out the deputy, so they were totally off the hook. So then she asked...
Okay, let me ask you this. To cut through the details, which I know are important to you and interesting, but... Were you able to get a form for her, and were you able to become her advocate?
Yeah, this is what I did get. They finally took her in back, and they're treating her in emergency treatment. They finally got her in the back room where they're going to treat her.
And what kind of treatment does she require?
She'll probably require dialysis to flush her system of all her toxins. Some guy was saying that she needs to have her bladder pushed on to express her bladder, you know, to get all the pee out. I'd have to research to find out what else is. I really don't. I'm not a doctor, so I don't know what else. But it's really serious when you don't pee for 6 to 8.
I hear you.
And she could be dead. She might have permanently damaged her organs.
Well, I think you did a good service in taking her to the hospital, encouraging her.
No,
did she drive to the hospital herself?
No, her boyfriend, who's African-American, drove to the hospital. And that's another reason they're not probably helping him, because they see the African-American boyfriend, they go, oh, an African-American, you know the shit.
Well, that's speculation, though.
Well, yeah, it is. But, you know, people discriminate against African-Americans. And when they see a black-white couple, it's like, oh, you know, they're racist, too, so don't think that they don't do it.
And... Thank you, John. We've been talking with...
Dr. John.
And that scrunching is not me pounding John Colby over the head. Rather, it is the machine in my pocket, which apparently went on again and recorded my footsteps. Important, of course, but not vital for the broadcast here. You are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. It's going to be freakradio.org without the 101.3, looks like, as of Monday. Although there again is a vague possibility we may be able to stay for a longer period of time, but that doesn't look like it's really in the cards. And as usual, I will point out to those of you who want to hear us on the radio, it ain't going to happen after Monday in all probability unless we find a transmitter site, which isn't really, in the past, has not been a big deal. All we need is a place to put up an antenna, like the side of a house or a tree, an electrical and internet source, which we will pay for, and a place to put a small shack about, I don't know, I think it's 4x4 or something. And it's not, you know, as they say, rocket science. It is rather the necessity for the kind of radio station we have. Otherwise, we will be reduced to being on the Internet, which we have done in the past and is likely to be happening. I mean, that's what is happening right now. We have no place to go. If you want to help out, for more information, go to freakradio.org, freakradio.org. Some of us are thinking of offering a reward. We did offer a reward and are now paying off that reward to folks who got us our studio location. You might say, well, we got a studio. What's your problem? The answer is our studio is not in the same place as our transmitter because... transmitters is a different kind of ball of wax than a studio for us. So if you want, get in touch with me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And that's also a number to call if you want to be part of the Free Radio Collective, which is seeking members, even though we are losing our transmitter site and will simply be on the Internet now until we can find a transmitter site. 423-4833. That's a number that you can reach me at, and I will put you in touch with the Collective. Or you can go directly to the Collective by going online and looking at our website, freakradio.org, freakradio.org. One word, small letters, Freak Radio. So, let's hear a little more from Streetside as I struggle valiantly to catch up with old audio. Oh, here's a little self-serving bit of audio.
So we're talking with
Marshall.
And Marshall, you have a comment about me.
Yes, I have a comment about Mr. North, because Mr. North been in the town as long as I have. I've been there in 1980, and I know him ever since.
I came here in 77, but then I left in 80, and so I'd say 88 to the present, pretty much.
88 to the present. So he's been doing an excellent job with the homeless and helping people get housing, and also directing people getting...
You're too generous.
No, I'm not too generous. He's also giving people directions to getting food and everything and above. But you know what? His most important thing he's been doing, he's been helping us out to try to get the rights that we deserve, like getting housing, like getting proper attention, like getting mental health, all the stuff that we need. He's helping us do that. Without his help, we wouldn't be where we're at right now.
I'm indispensable.
And that's enough of that. Of course, I had to put it on, didn't I? More interviews from folks out there whose voices don't normally get out. This is several days later, the 19th of September, at the Red Church, which every Monday has a meal around 6 o'clock. You can come and catch the prayer services at 5:30 or 5. You don't want to bother with that. If that's not to your liking, come at 6. And I don't know that they're now continuing to use the "we only let in 70 people with tickets," little tickets. But they were, which really dismayed me. And there is still hostility about taking food out of the Red Church on a plate. There's a ban on sitting on the grass outside, which, of course, is abusive and preposterous and plays into the bigotry that is all around the city like a shroud. Let's hear some of what the folks there have to say.
Talking with Chris. And Chris, you have a report.
Yes. I was camping over Laguna Beach, going towards Tampa, and I woke up one Tuesday morning to go check out my stuff, and it was taken by the Rangers. So now I lost all my stuff, and plus I lost my mom's stuff.
Now, what stuff did you lose?
My clothes, all my clothes, my blanket, my sleeping bag, my two blankets, my sleeping bag, and my mom's stuff.
And what kind of stuff did your mom have?
A photo album. Pictures of me and her in the front of my family.
Did you, is it state rangers, you think, or city rangers, county rangers?
I'm not sure.
And how do you know it was the rangers, not some
passerby? Because they saw me back there the night before with my blanket.
Did they make contact with you? Or?
Yes, they did.
What did they say?
They told me I had to leave the beach that night.
And so you suspect it was the rangers?
Yes, correct.
Have you contacted ranger stations to see if your stuff is being held at the police station?
I haven't yet, but I'm going to have a friend help me with that.
Well, I wish you luck with that.
Thank you.
Welcome to Santa Cruz.
I've been here for almost 14 years, so.
And we have been talking with
Chris.
Thanks, Chris. It should be on Free Radio Thursday night. So we're talking with David. And David, you yourself have tried to use the legal system to address some injustices locally?
It's not local. It's pretty much nationwide. It's a class action. It's very difficult.
But they have happened here?
Oh, yeah. It's pretty much happened anywhere in the country when you go
what
see
what kind of actions are we talking about?
We're talking about going to a doctor, and the doctor evaluates you in the emergency room and says you need emergency care, and but you're on an HMO, and the HMO Medi-Cal is Alliance California. Central Alliance for Healthcare, Central California Alliance.
And they don't give you adequate service?
They give adequate service, but the general practitioners don't give people a choice of doctors from the beginning of surgeons. So the emergency room gives you a choice of doctors that are qualified because they're a first-rate hospital. So that is pretty much is a difference. And the disease, let's say you get referred to for a shoulder injury or whatever injury, the disease is atrophy, not the injury. And so failing to treat the atrophy and fatty infiltration before surgery causes re-tears and other surgical complications.
This happened to you?
Oh, I didn't have re-tears, but it took them 10 months for surgery, and I was declined by Palo Alto.
What was the surgery you had?
It was a rotator cuff repair. Mostly people have problems with their...
Put that into English for those of us who are kind of...
Well, a rotator cuff is your shoulder.
Uh-huh. How are you doing now?
Just fine. Completely.
I'm going to leave it there, David, for the moment because I've got to get on with the rest of the folks, but thank you. Any final word?
Oh, that's fine.
Thank you, man.
Any reports?
I'm so overwhelmed.
Talking with
Jessica Nash.
I just got to say you're overwhelmed because, well, you know, you've been exhausted for days, and you've been trying to get some kind of satisfactory response from the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as well as attorneys. And you're also involved in this, sir.
Yes, I'm Jack Nash.
And Jack, is this woman running you ragged? What's going on?
She's driving me crazy. I have to convince her to even get in the car with all these bugs. You know, I have to kind of psych her out. And I killed a lot of them. So.
And that was an issue, the Homeless Lack of Services Center's failure to deal with the lice problem.
And yeah, we also have, our attorney has had, she gave us all the emails. Everything's supposed to be copacetic at the shelter, but we don't have any day services, we have nothing. And she's like, call me, Jordan, call me tomorrow after 11. I'm like, what are we doing between that? They want us to leave our car for 3 days, but don't give us a choice to sleep anymore.
Have you...
No food, just a shower and our mail, and then we have to leave the premises.
Wow, and have you been able to go back there or not?
No, not as of yet. Only for mail, and well, we haven't even been able to take a shower yet. Until tomorrow, we may get a shower. It's
ignored us today, just like the other day, even though we had the, you know, this is, and there's a bunch of lies in there as well, in the emails, which I'm sure it's going to be accountable for.
So, did you get any help from the Colbys?
Yes.
What kind of help did they provide?
I got into the hospital, and then after they treated me like crap there, we talked, and then I went to a camp over at a different...
Urgent care?
Yeah. And then she got me in, boom, 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 got me out with my antibiotics. So I was kind of living with my head spinning. It happened so fast.
Was it good?
Yeah. The first time I had even, you know, the first time I just was able to deal with the doctor, and she didn't give me any hard times or be mean to me or... All the river stuff that they deal with, and they're horrible. And then we got kicked out. Dominican.
That's what I heard.
Oh, yeah.
I heard that from John today. He gave me a call.
I happened to be walking in, and Jack was, she's like, he needs to leave, and she looked at me, she needs to leave. And I was like, what?
Who said this?
She's just a triage nurse.
And you said, you need to leave.
we just went on with what she said and figured at 6:30 on Sunday, we'll find out where she works and when she works.
And we've been talking with
Jessica Nash.
And with
Jack Nash.
Anything else?
Lots more to come.
Exactly. All the way to the end, we'll see it.
Take care. You sound much better than before.
I don't have the details. Julie Shaw.
You say you don't have the details, but you think people are getting assaulted?
I'm seeing a lot of black eyes lately. What's that all about?
A lot of...
Looks like physical violence is happening to some of the members of the homeless community, but I don't know the facts or details.
It's true, black eyes. I've seen at least one person in the who now bombs with a black eye. It's true.
That's very concerning. I hope that there's not some kind of
vigilante group on the loose.
I hope not. I hope if there is any vigilanteism, that it's going to be reported, and I hope that that kind of evil would be disclosed to the authorities and to
lawyers. Of course, the authorities are with the evildoer.
And to lawyers, like maybe with the ACLU meeting that's coming up on October 5th at the Museum of Art and History.
The forum, you mean?
There's a forum for homelessness. Yeah, I think that might be a good place for people to come and disclose violence that might be happening on the streets.
Good idea, or sooner, actually.
I hope so, yeah, immediately, actually. You need to. People need to shine a light on that kind of stuff that's happening in our community if people are getting assaulted on the streets here.
And we've been talking with...
Julie Shaw, Santa Cruz Full-Timers.
Who else? Thank you.
And if anybody has any reports of harassment against homeless people, violence that's happened in the last 2 weeks, I'd like to hear about it. Please do call in 427-3772, 427-3772 here. And we will let the community know what your thoughts are and what your experience is and what's going on.
Thank you.
What about you, sir? Any comments? Is she lying? What's going on here?
I got nothing.
You got nothing?
Nothing from nothing.
Any reports in the street?
No, right now.
Any reports? Street reports? Any street reports? Okay. How are you doing?
Good.
Anything you want to say for free radio?
Yeah.
What do you got? What do you take at us?
Let's hear about your book.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Any reports, sir?
Yeah,
or should I say Senor Carcero?
Well, tomorrow I get interviewed by a personal investigator from HUD that's been assigned to me.
Is she good looking?
I don't know, but she sounds very professional. And she set aside a whole hour for me. So we have a lot to talk about.
Are you indoors at the moment?
I am indoors at night. I'm outdoors during the daytime.
So where are you being housed during, or warehoused during the day? Or during the night?
Streets, on the streets during the day.
And at night?
And on the night, a different church. Which has been challenging after open heart surgery. But
how is your heart doing? My heart is right here.
Yeah, well, I mean, right on.
Well, mine's bigger than yours.
You know, I'm still alive, man. You know, and they haven't heard the last of me. We're going to go over living conditions there in detail.
You were essentially for complaining and needing a little more time to deal with financial difficulties. You were dumped from the Pauley loft and onto the street where you acquired pneumonia after, was it a protest sleep in front of the homeless lack of services?
No, I had pneumonia beforehand. I had congestive heart failure beforehand. I had the birth defect in my heart beforehand, and they put me outside where I began to have a mild heart attack, according to Dominican Hospital. Okay? That's what happened. And this happened over my complaining about living conditions there.
Again, describe your main complaints about living conditions were?
Mold in the wall. Is rampant everywhere. The staff is complaining about it quietly to me, saying that it's causing a lot of respiratory infections, and that's what initially caused my pneumonia that caused the congestive heart failure, is a poor ventilation and the black mold in the system. But it's worse than that. It's no proper accommodation for the disabled in the bathrooms. It's dangerous stairways at night, men going up and down them because they have prostate problems because they're elderly men. You know, there's a total lack of concern for the disabled, and yet they purposely go out there and collect them and warehouse them in the loft. So if they're going to collect disabled people, they need to accommodate disabled people.
And when you say they collect them, what makes you think they don't just come there of their own accord?
Well, then they get refused because they're not in a proper voucher program, and you can't get into the loft anymore unless you have a voucher.
Pathway to housing.
Yeah, halfway to housing, halfway to hell.
The creme de la creme.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to go into a war zone in Watsonville these days, yeah, that's just go within compass.
So they will actually get you a place in Watsonville if you...
Well, they're making people sign a contract that in 6 months they will go to wherever they place them. If they go into the law.
Now, what about the Page Smith Community House?
The last thing I saw there was the same mayhem, drunkenness, and methamphetamine that's always gone on at Page Smith.
I see. Any other thoughts?
No, just stay tuned because tomorrow afternoon I have an hour-long rap session with a HUD investigator.
Will Phil Kramer be joining you?
Phil Kramer will be at the top of my list.
And we've been talking with?
Andy Carcello.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
All right. Any reports?
Phil Kramer, for those who've forgotten, is the head of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. We had Andy Carcello in the studio on Sunday, which was about a week after this was recorded, more or less. And he was really kind of in weak shape. He had a form he needed signed to release his medical records. So apparently the investigation that is from HUD is going slowly, if it's going at all. I'm not sure where it's at now. This has kind of been one of the cards or arrows in the quiver of the Colbys, who are activists who are particularly for disabled folks, who demand changes in how homeless and disabled people are accommodated, or they will file complaints with these federal agencies in the hopes of getting the federal agencies to pressure the state and local authorities to make the changes that need to be made. And I've always been rather skeptical about whether this is successful. Perhaps it's the 150 cc's that I may be exaggerating, that John Colby adds to each of his letters. It seems outrageously counterproductive to me and pointless. But if he gets actual results, and Pat and John sometimes do seem to get results, particularly when they're pressuring local agencies, even if these are only threats, bureaucrats apparently don't like the paper trail. So that it's something to consider. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, and it's time for one of those famous musical breaks.
Miami, New York, L.A., Detroit, 50% unemployed, Reaganomics, free market debt, Nicaragua, the troops are sent, another generation oppressed, ignored, lives cut short, dreams deferred, with politics offered no trust and choice, another flame flared up from a silenced voice. Crack hit the ghettos around 83, it was money on the streets of poverty, and it spread like a disease, tore the heart out of the communities, with Nancy Reagan saying just say no, another white lie was good to go. They poisoned a generation, protected profit for corporations. Who are the players? Who is the boss? Selling arms to Iran at inflated costs. Is it the Neoplandone and Ricky Ross? George Bush Sr. and Oliver North from the sketchbooks of the CIA. The gun sales up to South LA. They brought cocaine from Nicaragua. They brought cocaine from Nicaragua. They brought cocaine from Nicaragua, used the profit to train the Contras. From Nixon up to Reagan, upholding a culture of racism with housing segregation, spatial deconcentration, so black and white this game they play. Three strikes are out, that's the final say. Cops rounded folks up like overseers, put them back to work as prisoners. Now for crack it's 5 years, maybe solitude, 10 more if you take an attitude. 5 months probation if you're a coked up white, set the bar real high, you can pay the price. Now the prisons are private, it's a business move to put those idle hands to use. Through state corporate contracts, prison labor brought slavery back. Who are the players? Who is the boss? Selling arms to Iran at inflated costs. Is it the Neoplandone and Ricky Ross? George Bush Sr. and Oliver North from the sketchbooks of the CIA. The gun sales up to South LA. They brought cocaine from Nicaragua. They brought cocaine from Nicaragua. They brought cocaine from Nicaragua. Used the profit to train the Contras.
Poisoned Generation by Ryan Harvey. All this stuff is on YouTube, in case you want to hear it yourself, from Riot Folk, which you've heard a lot from, or a lot of that from me, I should say, in the last few shows, and you'll probably hear more. In case you want to call in and complain, you can, 427-3772. So, tomorrow night, as I mentioned before, Steve Plaich will be having a meet-and-greet session between 5 and 7 at Woodstock Pizza. And he often appears, well, pretty regularly appears on the Indie Bay website. That's Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. Just Google for Santa Cruz Indie Media. And he's on the, as I mentioned before, a lot of boards. And he, for years, to his credit, has been speaking out directly against the sleeping ban. Did organizing around that when it was, it had a brief moment as a political cause in the spring of this year when discredited and now about to leave office former Mayor Don Lane finally, after 27 years, got off his ass and said he opposed the sleeping ban. It's, I suppose we should always be happy when, you know, the individuals finally come to the right conclusions, but he didn't, he hasn't, not a peep from him has been heard since his proposal was defeated in April. So it was, it looked like to me like a grudging action on his part in response to pressure from the Freedom Sleepers and other activists in the community who have noted that people have no place to sleep and they're sleeping anywhere and everywhere, and it's a bad solution because it's it makes no sense. It hurts people as human beings. It hurts the community. You know, I mean, one can go on, as I always do, about it. And I actually regularly give a small blurb about the Freedom Sleepers every week. If you want to check it out on the Indie Bay calendar, that's Santa Cruz Indie Media calendar, which announces the Tuesday night Freedom Sleep, which is a sleep out in front of City Hall, which happens Tuesday nights. And it'll be happening again. Number 65 will be happening again this coming Tuesday. Anyway, Steve, I requested to Steve that he write me his accomplishments on the homeless front, because he formed a group called the Homeless Legal Assistance Project, and I have had a kind of a hard time tracking down the success stories of the Homeless Legal Assistance Project, or even where papers were filed. I mean, it's happened. It's not a vacant record, but I don't have a clear record, and I wanted to get more of a record, and I will attempt to get that. Steve is so busy running around different groups, Association of Faith Communities, ACLU, SCORE, MH Can, Depot Park group to try to set up a homeless, or to advocate for that as a homeless camping site. And he was, of course, working as a suicide prevention worker and a needle exchange worker. And these are all good things. But the question is, if you're going to be doing something specifically around homeless issues and you're making claims that you are, then you better damn well follow through on them. I should say that to myself, because half the time, or more than half the time, when we, as far as legal matters go, I'm very spotty about doing this stuff. We had a whole project at Huff that did not get carried past the point of getting claims against the city and having the city reject the claims and starting to fill out the court papers but never going to the small claims court in Watsonville. That was a project to demand damages from the city and from individual police officers for the injury of waking someone up at midnight when they have no place to sleep. And that was proposed by an out-of-town attorney, Paul Cook, who is still willing to probably help us out in some respects, but we didn't really quite get the person power, the energy to get all those cases rolling, and we didn't have it. We failed ourselves, too. Huff has, or at least I have, as part of Huff. And so we have, you know, one has to acknowledge that when you're talking about criticism of others. But Steve has did present very quickly a list of 15, or I guess it's 14, different ways he has contributed to homeless welfare. And I'm going to read those ways and comment on them, since he is, of course, the one candidate who is not included, well, one of the candidates who is not included in the slate of four, the so-called progressive slate of four that includes Drew Glover, Sandy Brown, Chris Krohn, and Steve Schnarr, two of whom I know. Actually, I know all of them. But I might have more hope for Schnarr and Glover than for the other two, Krohn and Brown, mainly because Krohn and Brown have been in power and I've seen them in action. Unfortunately, I've also seen Glover in action, too, though not in power in quite the same way. And I've just we got vanilla activists here that kind of disturb me, and I'm afraid they are not likely to take a sharp turn to the left if they're in power. But anyway, what Plaich has proposed, I haven't asked these same questions of the other activists yet, and I will, I hope, though I keep saying that and don't quite do it, mainly because I haven't got much enthusiasm for these elections. I don't think the city council slate makes a lot of difference, given the fact that it's the staff and the city manager that make the choices. But there are, some say, and it's not entirely an unreasonable position, there are some differences between the candidates, and people can make their own choices there. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, except to mention, because Plaich is a regular, I wouldn't say contributor to the show, but he often appears on the air, well, he often speaks on the air if you can get a hold of him. I may actually call him to get an update. But he touts his creating the Association of Faith Communities, which is a 20-person rotating shelter from church to church, which he's been pushing for 4 years, and he also serves as a monitor for it. And, you know, what's wrong with that? Nothing is wrong with that. But to claim that that's going to lead to something bigger, as he always does or has in the past, is bullshit. And I don't like it when these expectations are raised. It's also a way of primping your own reputation, which I don't enjoy seeing happening, unless it's justified, which I don't think it was in this case. Also, the Association of Faith Communities has received a letter from Huff recently, and asking them to allow people to go out to do a freedom sleep a couple nights a month, or even four nights a month, and then not be thrown out of the program. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable kind of thing. When I talked to the otherwise reasonable Mel Nunez about this, he went into a sort of a passionate denunciation of the person who had expressed her concerns that she was not allowed to go out. And I wasn't able to secure from him any assurance that this would be different. Anyway, it's a small program. It's, you know, I don't know why you should spend a lot of time on it. But I guess you swim in the fish tank you're in, if it's little or big. So he did create this. He helped fund and fundraise and serve many people at the homeless at the Calvary Episcopal Monday Night Church, which I've mentioned before, and he is there regularly. And I've referred people to him there, and he does talk to them. I'm not quite sure how successful his conversations have been as a homeless legal assistance project, kind of the sole member of the Homeless Legal Assistance Project. He's also organized the Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners. Well, he's been part of that sometime at the Vets Hall, sometime at the Civic, sometime at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Those are nice charity events, sure. Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project, he says he's helped 150 people there. I'd be curious to know more details about that. He claims he sued the city of Santa Cruz by challenging the stay-away ordinance, or that his organization, the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project, did. But the suit failed because the court would not recognize them as really an affected group. This, the stay-away ordinance, was the ordinance that was passed, essentially giving parks and rec rangers the power, independently of the courts, to order you to stay away on pain of jail, even if you haven't been found guilty in court of anything, if they accuse you of violating a minor infraction. And that has been used regularly, almost religiously, for every ticket for at least a one-day stay-away order, and it's also been followed up on a number of cases to expand the stay-away orders. We may hear from one of those activists, if not today, Shannon Breeden, who is also known as, she's a poet, and you've often heard her stuff on the air. Mama Shannon, I think she calls herself. And anyway, that lawsuit didn't go anywhere. It wasn't taken to federal court. And more to the point, he's the vice chair of the ACLU. And as in that position, I've told him he has had the opportunity to raise issues that he doesn't raise. And I think he probably doesn't raise them because he's afraid he's not going to get the Northern California ACLU to do anything. Before, it was the Rotkin majority on the ACLU locally. Then it was in Northern California. My position has always been, whether it's with Micah Posner or Don Lane or Steve Plaich, you raise the issues clearly and strongly. And if you don't get anywhere with them, at least you've raised them, and it falls to the next person to try. But if you don't have the issue clear, and if you don't raise it in a forthright manner, it will not be addressed, or it's less likely to be addressed at all. He claimed to develop the Homeless Depot Shelter Program, which is, I think, a paper program that he'd like to see initiated along with Rabbi Phil Posner, and both of them were freedom sleepers. He also developed a guest parking and safe spaces parking programs. Again, a paper program that he would like to see the city council provide. So would I. I mean, it's fine. He's spoken at a class on homelessness taught by Don Lane up at UCSC. Well, whoopee-doo. He's organized safe spaces and sleeping ban amendment for the council consideration. Yeah, I mean, I've written about that too extensively and spoken about it, and of course endlessly on this radio show. He claims to be the only city council candidate who has consistently spoken out in favor of a repeal on the camping ban, and I think that is true. It's one of the reasons that I think he's worth some time to consider if you want to vote for any of these clowns. And he's chairperson of the board of MHCAN, which is not particularly something I think he can be proud of, considering his lack of transparency there so far as I've seen. And he's the primary organizer for a forum on homelessness coming up on October 5th that the ACLU is throwing. It makes me nervous, the phrase homelessness. That's always a phrase that's used instead of civil rights for the homeless. Because, although you would think the ACLU would be only really primarily, it's not concerned with housing issues primarily, but with rights being taken away. But why isn't that part of the title? Well, maybe it's just I'm being picky. Anyway, you can ask him questions about these issues yourself. Tomorrow, 5 to 7 at Woodstock Pizza. Who knows? Maybe he'll be supplying pizza, or maybe he'll just be chatting. I think he's been running around knocking on door to door. He takes positions on a wide variety of issues. His website does not emphasize his opposition to the sleeping ban. That's another point. He goes to different constituencies and emphasizes different things, and I don't like that, but that's what politicians do. I'm going to spin off into another musical moment, or a few moments, and then I'll be back with an interesting article I want to bring to your attention. So stay with me.
American mythology, the stories told about Squanto and the Great Feast. Native sitting down with European settlers in celebration of some future of peace. And it's depressing when you hear the real story, how their diseases spread like wildfire, and how they tore the land right out from under their feet, made them servants of the war-crazed British Empire. Oh, that's bullshit. I see genocide when I look in it. Christians killing savages in the name of God, invoking their religion to justify their deaths. And I understand there's many types of Christians. There's many types of Muslims, there's many types of Jews. There's also many ways to exploit and kill people. There's just as many ways for your faith to be abused. Oh, there's deep incisions in our history. Oh, the scars of the past mark the face of today. Celebrate no holidays with roots and land theft. I don't salute no flags and stand for hate. I don't bow to any leaders who kill for salvation. And I don't pray to any gods to do the same. I have neither an Irgun or Al Qaeda. No Reagan, no Stalin, no nation, no king. I have faith in the prospect of change. With the people around me embracing equality, oh, oh, there's deep incisions in our history, no, the scars of the past mark the face of today.
And that was Ryan Harvey, American Mythology. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides with you for another half hour. And then Uncle Dennis will be either coming in or will be putting on something of his. I'm not sure if he's coming in today. I think he is. And, yeah, that's what's going to happen. There's a story that I'm going to be reading, but I've also a bit of a news clip I want to play about a guy arrested for registering voters outside an East San Jose Target store for being on private property, where the private property was part of a community center, I mean, a large shopping area in the same city where the famous Pruneyard decision happened way back 46 years ago in 1980, which held that you can't stop people from political activity even on privately owned property where there's a essentially a community collection of stores in a shopping center area where it's a community center. But let's first hear what the police have to say about this. We do have a slow transfer process here. I'm not sure why. Maybe the computer is just cranky and old. But it says it's transferring, so I'm going to believe it. Perhaps I shouldn't. There we go. Or do we go? It's a little hard to tell. Ah, yes. I think we're going. What I'll do is I will start reading this story, and when you hear another voice interrupting, that will be the voice of authority. Group spin arrest into voters. Man detained in front of Target while registering shoppers. It looks like this is not going to go at all, so I'll simply go ahead with the story. This is from the San Jose Mercury News. Community leaders are looking to transform the controversy over a man's arrest while registering voters outside an East San Jose Target store into newfound momentum to boost local Latino election turnout in November. The strategy could prove to be a clever pivot if evidence if evidenced by a rally Thursday led by the Latino Vote Alliance of Silicon Valley and joined by San Jose Police Chief Eddie Garcia outside the same store, where Alliance co-chair Salvador Chava Bustamante was arrested Monday. Speakers avoided dwelling on Bustamante's trespass arrest and instead framed it as a catalyst for increasing Latino voter registration and election turnout. As several dozen supporters looked on, speakers aimed to parlay the huge public visibility of Target as a way to draw eyes and ears to their cause. "Justice will not come until our people are fully integrated into political process," Bustamante said. "We are willing to be arrested not once, but as many times as is necessary to assert the fundamental right." After the rally, organizers proceeded to work to register voters outside the store, and this time it looked unlikely that the store would be calling police again in the face of an intense public and media spotlight. Bustamante was arrested on suspicion of misdemeanor trespassing Monday afternoon, and that was a couple weeks ago, after he refused to leave the front of the store at Story and South King Roads, where he was working to register voters alongside a colleague. Police said Target security staff called for officers after several requests for them to leave and cited past customers' complaints of, quote, aggressive soliciting. That's the name of the Santa Cruz ordinance that makes it illegal to sit quietly with a sign on Pacific Avenue in most places. They call that aggressive soliciting, similar kind of false language being used here, I suspect. Garcia, the police chief, contends the two responding officers did nothing wrong and were responding to a service call and upholding the law. Certain pieces of private property can be considered public if they serve as community gathering spots like plazas, food courts, and atriums, and if the gathering does not interfere with normal business. But California law offers a narrower view of what constitutes a functionally public place and excludes sidewalks and entrances on the grounds that they are not for gathering, but rather getting shoppers in and out of a business. Still, Garcia said his department will revisit its policies. That's the police chief, or the, I guess it's the police chief. San Jose police chief. In search of common ground between enforcing the law and not having to immediately resort to making arrests for what amounts to civil disobedience. Actually, it's not civil disobedience. It's simply asserting your civil rights, which is not civil disobedience. He brought up the idea of instituting more conflict resolution measures before a citation arrest is made. Gee, let's persuade you to abandon your rights through a conflict mediation approach. If that doesn't work, then we'll arrest you. This is a very familiar police chief. The issue is about equity, Garcia said. There are other stores in the city where you can go out front and no one calls the police. That's where the frustration arises. Maria Noel Fernando, Latino Vote Alliance co-chair and organizer for Working Partnerships USA, urged registration volunteers and supporters to use Bustamante's address or arrest and the ensuing response as motivation to increase the community's voting power. "We must ensure that what happened on Monday, his arrest, does not happen again. We will continue to ensure that until our voices are heard." And I actually may have the story by Robert Salonga, San Jose Mercury News, group spin arrest into voters. And I guess at least one of our listeners may be happy to hear about the, before I leave this story, I have observed ACLU members in the parking lot in front of Trader Joe's, a parking lot that's used by a variety of stores there, restaurants, jewelry stores, I think a beauty shop, FedEx. At that time it was, I think, something else. But they were simply trying to register ACLU people or to give out literature. And they were threatened with arrest. In fact, they were given a citation for being on the property. The manager of Trader Joe's was the initiating person. I attempted to get the local ACLU to make a statement on this, and they would not do so. That's when Steve Plaich was on the board. And that's just one minor example of how our local rights are being abused, and then our local so-called civil liberties organization are doing nothing about it, but using it as a platform for political advancement. Or let's put it that way. It certainly looks that way and based upon the many times they've ignored issues. But we're also being told, and it's not entirely untrue, that the ACLU has begun to take action on a number of issues. It's come out against the sleeping ban. It has come out in favor of the reporter, part of the Santa Cruz 11, though not the rest of us, as we were dragged through the courts after the two of the Santa Cruz 11, who are the people who were part of the Occupy movement that were targeted for harassment, for peaceful occupation of a vacant bank building at 75 River Street, still vacant, owned by or leased by Wells Fargo Bank, which, as you may have read recently in the papers, is a major purveyor of fraud still across the country. And, of course, gets very little, well, gets no attention from authorities and very little attention from activists for that kind of behavior. My hat's off to Bustamante and to the San Jose activists who are seen to be a whole lot more active than we are, which is nothing new. But you never can tell. Maybe we'll get busy and start doing what they do. Medical marijuana helps with opioid addiction, study says. And I was hoping to get a call, as I mentioned before, from Nick of Watsonville, who was on the C4 committee, the committee that the supervisors used to try to, as sort of a cover device, before they came up with their own even worse proposal to essentially criminalize much marijuana cultivation in the county. But haven't heard from him, so we'll have to wait on that. After states pass laws permitting medical marijuana, drivers in those states become less likely to test positive for opioids after fatal car accidents, a new study from the Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health has found, whoever that may be. Researchers analyzed federal crash data in 18 states over the period 1999 to 2013. States that passed a medical marijuana law during this period saw a reduction in opioid involvement in fatal car accidents relative to states without such a law. The reduction was greatest among drivers aged 21 to 40, the age group most likely to use medical marijuana where it's available. The study, published Thursday in the American Journal of Public Health, is the first to look at the relationship between medical marijuana laws and individual-level laboratory measurements of opioid use. The results suggest a fairly straightforward conclusion that in states with medical marijuana laws, fewer individuals are using opioids, the authors write. It adds to a growing body of evidence suggesting that chronic pain patients may substitute marijuana for prescription painkillers in states where the option is available. One paper published earlier this year found that Medicare Part D prescribed for painkillers declined significantly in states that passed medical marijuana laws. It's time that the feds made marijuana available, folks. Or at least okayed its being prescribed or recommended. Other studies have shown that medical marijuana states see fewer painkiller overdoses than states without medical pot, and that access to medical marijuana dispensaries is also linked to declining rates of opiate overdose and death. This is a story again in the Mercury News. Medical marijuana helps with opioid addiction, study says. It's reprinted from the Washington Post. Christopher Ingraham. And folks who are reading the paper may have noticed that Governor Brown, that's Jerry Brown, has vetoed two laws that ban smoking on the beaches and parks, and another one earlier this last week, it was mentioning that bans smoking on college campuses. And there's an initiative coming up, Proposition 56, which you heard activist Becky Johnson talk about on the air either last show or the show before, which would raise money by taxing cigarettes. And here's a letter from Patrick Wilder. Tobacco tax unfairly targets poor smokers, which was, I think, Becky Johnson's point, or one of them. Vices are not crimes. Like the goose that laid the golden egg, smokers are consistently targeted for a shakedown. Only 13% of the tax from Proposition 56 would actually go to programs to help smokers quit. Smoking is an addiction and raises the cost, and the raising the cost does nothing to help with this addiction. It's a long, slow process that takes years to quit, which only a small percentage of people actually accomplish. I'm going to stop in the middle of this and point out, I think the point is not that it'll help smokers to quit who are already smoking, is it'll make people who are likely to smoke less likely because it's too expensive. But again, I haven't read the arguments pro and con in the official Proposition 56 ballot argument, but those in the tobacco industry or are sympathetic to their arguments are making arguments that are ignoring that argument, which is it's primarily concerned with stopping people from smoking to begin with by raising the price. But he goes on, you can't force anyone anyone at gunpoint to end their addiction. I guess I would wonder, does he have the same attitude towards arrests of people for heroin sales, distribution, use, possession, and so forth? Cigarette taxes are regressive and unfairly target the poor of a higher rate of smoking. That is true. The British Royal College of Physicians endorse vaping to help smokers quit, while our politicians see an additional revenue source by taxing e-cigarettes as well. And that was another point that Becky Johnson made. There's another political candidate you've heard about, of course, endlessly, about Trump and Clinton, you know, the liar and the braggart, or is it the braggart and the liar? I'm not sure. And then you've also probably heard about Gary Johnson on the Libertarian Party and Jill Stein on the Green Party. There's another one from, there is another party. Gloria LaRiva is running on the Peace and Freedom Party. Here's a little letter about her. Stephen Patt. Vernon Chapman compares Donald Trump's hypothetical war crime of stealing Iraqi oil to the mistake of actually invading Iraq. But that was no mistake. It was a deliberate decision made by President George W. Bush and others with an all-important dissent from then-Senator Hillary Clinton. Since Iraq hadn't attacked the United States, nor was imminently poised to do so, that attack was not a hypothetical war crime, but a very real one, a war of aggression. The same could be said for the war in which Clinton played an even larger role, the bombing of Libya and the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi. Peace and Freedom Party presidential candidate Gloria LaRiva has been a leader in the fight against both of those wars and many others. To say no to war crimes, vote peace and freedom. And I may ask Steve Argue, who has been in the past a Freedom and Peace and Freedom Party supporter, to come on the air to talk about that, although I don't know who he's supporting, if anybody, for Fuhrer in the upcoming Who's Going to Head the Polo Club plebiscite in November. Anyway, this let's hear a little more from the streets, or actually in this case, I believe it's the Red Church from the 19th, and then you're going to be hearing a bunch of music from Uncle Dennis.
Street reports. Anything happening, Bob, you want to pass on?
They haven't had soap in the washroom by the Locust Street. There's no soap in there.
No soap. Well, you don't need soap.
The dispenser.
What do you want, luxury items in the washrooms? I mean, come on, man. For sake.
Yeah, the dispenser's been out for a while.
Thank you. Anything from the street you want to pass on?
It's not hard to fix.
Sorry.
At the moment, not really, not at the moment.
Okay. Well, if you think of something, let me know.
I'm looking for housing right now.
Yeah, I hear you. As ever.
I put my application in for a couple places. I hope I get it.
I wish you luck on it. Good luck. Street reports of any kind?
No.
Any reports from the street?
No. Except nobody's bothered me lately.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I'll buy that. Hey, what about you? So you're smiling. Does that mean things are good?
No, I'm just happy to see you.
You're just keeping a happy attitude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anything happen outside you want to comment on?
No, not right now. I'm good.
Thank you. Street reports of any kind? Any reports from the street? Anything happened to you that you feel like talking about, that you think the community should know about?
Well, maybe they should have a meeting at the courthouse about it. You know, maybe they should consult a judge about some of the things.
What kind of things should they talk about?
Well, you know, how to have it waived. You know, because if the officer, the reporting officer, is given the ticket and he doesn't show up in court, you could drop the charges. People don't know about that stuff.
I hear you. And we've been talking with
Alex.
Thank you, Alex. He'll be on Free Radio on Thursday night. So, I'll give you a card here, if I can find one.
We do college radio?
It's pirate radio.
Pirate radio.
Meaty. Gnar. Any reports? Any street reports?
You gotta be kidding me.
No.
Me?
You.
Me?
You. Hey.
Every boy, every
I got a
cop,
story.
Every cop.
I'll be right with you.
Robert, every cop in this town is going to jail.
All right.
Every cop in this town is going straight to jail.
That would be interesting.
Knock him out.
First story, I'm going to cut this guy because he's taking forever.
He's my friend. No, I'm dead, sir. You need to do that for me.
Thank you, man.
I've been arrested blue times for zero reasons. Zero reasons.
I remember we talked about it once or twice, I think.
No, it's ludicrous.
I hear you.
No, I'll talk to you in a minute.
Thank you, man.
I want to kill somebody. Hey, look at me. Look at me in the eye. How old do you think I am? I'm 60-something years old.
Wow, that's pretty good looking for 60.
But I want to kill a cop.
And we'll leave this angry man. And I'm going to play you a little bit of something I've been promising for weeks, if not longer, which is a flashback to 2002, when we had a weekly speak out called, I think it was called Merry Mondays, on the corner of Cooper and Pacific. And we set up, set down chairs, and we had a person standing on a podium talking in sort of a street corner speech. And this activist you're going to hear is Becky Johnson talking a bit about her arrest for chalking with erasable chalk on the sidewalk political messages. We're not going to be able to hear all of it, but I want you to catch a taste of it, and I'll be playing the rest of it on Sunday in order to get a sense of the kind of the dynamism that we had going 14 years ago. That may be kind of depressing, actually, but maybe it's inspiring.
Well, let me give you an update on the Great Hopscotch trial. We went to court on Friday the 13th, and the city attorney showed up. John Barisoni, the head city attorney, is prosecuting this infraction case of chalking on the sidewalk. And we had Sergeant Jack McPhillips took the witness stand in the People versus Becky Johnson and Tim Rinker. He testified as how he had arrested Tim Rinker on August 28th, even as he wrote, "Vandals don't use chalk," in front of O'Neill's surf shop on Pacific Avenue. We try to abate as soon as possible. It's the broken windows theory, the officer testified. McPhillips was referring to a study done by criminologists in Kelling and Wilson and first published in the Atlantic Monthly Journal in 1982. Since then, many cities, including Santa Cruz, have used the ideas portrayed in the study and treatise to put forth a policy of policing minor quality of life behaviors to preserve the public order and to increase the feeling of comfort and safety experienced by more fearful groups of citizens accessing public spaces. But is it legal to argue that Tim Rinker and myself chalked a sidewalk with erasable chalk and that that's in any way equivalent to a broken window? Purposefully or recklessly breaking a window is arguably a destructive act. Broken glass itself presents an immediate health and safety hazard. The lack of protection of the contents of the building from the weather, animal, insect, and trespassers is undoubtedly a concern of not just the property owner, but the larger community itself. Unquestionably, Tim Ranker and I were engaged in First Amendment activity. We wrote political messages on the public sidewalk. On that day, on June 28th, we were alerting passersby to a public meeting that was to be held at 1 p.m. two doors down here at the McPherson Art and History Center.
Back to the update.
That the decisions that they were going to be making affected how public policy would be affected downtown for anyone who uses public spaces. Since many of the issues discussed at this meeting concerned homeless people, I wrote, "Sleep is not a crime" on the sidewalk so that people coming to and from the meeting would be aware that the rights of homeless people would be defended at this meeting. Chalk is cheap, readily available. It's sold across the street at Palace Arts in buckets labeled sidewalk chalk. Sergeant McPhillips testified that a person bending down to chalk a sidewalk blocks entranceways to shops, discourages shoppers from frequenting the stores, causes the stores to be unprofitable, erodes the tax base, reduces tax revenue for social services, and contributes to the overall decline of the community. He also cited the broken windows theory as a source of his information and of public policy by the Santa Cruz Police Department. The question is whether the city has proved that there's any connection between chalked messages and any case of citing a person for obstructing a sidewalk or interfering with a business or vandalism or graffiti. They didn't even prove that when Tim Brinker and I chalked that it incited more chalking. Tim Ranker and I first used erasable chalk to create a hopscotch pattern, just like this one here. And then we played a few rounds of hopscotch, which is an innocent children's game. Probably everyone here has played hopscotch at some point in their life. How can this be equivalent to a broken window? I assert that it is not. Kelling and Wilson admit that the beginning of their treatise, The Application of Broken Windows, that it doesn't really affect true crime in any sense. The purpose of the use of police to influence the look and the feel of the community based on economic and stranger profiling, making arrests based on economic status. In the article, Kelling cites numerous instances where persons had no permanent address and were cited for vagrancy. Loitering laws were also being used to make arrests of strangers. All of these practices have a questionable constitutional basis. Simply being a stranger is not a crime, nor does it have any place in the city of Santa Cruz, which is encouraging tourist business. We don't want the public to get the idea that Santa Cruz has a reputation of arresting strangers for not being known. Has the broken windows theory ever gotten past the point of being a theory? Apparently not. Kelling and Wilson were quoted in an interview 4 years after their article came out and printed in the New York Times, in which they stated that they still did not have any data to support their theory. Chalk undoubtedly communicates messages to walk by. When I was in court, I testified to how effective it is to use a chalk message on the sidewalk. Virtually everybody reads it as they go by. It's also kind of has a performance art aspect. And that when a person's tracking, passerbys tend to stop and watch and see what the message is going to be. It has a distinctly different character than passing out a flyer. The court must consider that it's a First Amendment issue, and the city has to produce the greater burden of evidence as to the harm and the cost of allowing those messages to be written in erasable chalk. Chalk writing is cheap. It doesn't kill trees. It doesn't require intruding on the privacy of an individual in the way that, say, even passing out a flyer does.